You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Now ye augur, pray for mercy from Puss in Woods.
Ooh, I'll kill that cat. Oh, that is nasty.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 68 for the 10th of December, 2011. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yep.
Is that all I'm going to get?
Well, okay.
That's all I got.
It's late, man. We're doing the podcast thing after hours again. You know,
we're doing this late thing again. It's kind of interesting. I've got crickets growing in the background.
it's a very different film.
It is. It's a very different show. On the other side
film
of the
film, actually, of course, is what I meant.
Fair enough. On the other side of the suburbs over there, we have Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
I love how we've gone from a live audience to having crickets.
I know. It's good. I think it didn't even occur to me. That's very, very good. I like that a lot.
I'm also, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm kind of yeah, too, but that's all right. We're here. We're doing it. We're live. No, we're not live. No, we're pre-recording. Whatever.
We're alive.
Welcome to Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. This week, we're going to review the Shrek spin-off, Puss in Boots, or...
Holy frijoles.
All I need is the boots. taking a little bit of film news and... Wait. We're going to be reviewing Puss in Boots.
Oh.
There we go. Taking a little film news and deliver a brand new list of five.
See, this is what happens when you give him a fucking comic book podcast. All of a sudden he becomes obsessed with panel content.
I love my soundboard. How about this one?
Time for a disappearing act, boys.
All right, I'm out of here.
I get this every week, Josh.
So wait. Can I just get this right? Basically, the story is that, Richard, you go out and find all this news and content and stuff like that, and he just plays with his soundboard.
Yeah, pretty much.
You just summed up the comic book show in a nutshell.
Sorry, dude, I'm new to it. Listen to Behind the Panels, the show where I do all the hard work and David plays with sounds.
Dave, hit us with another one.
Oh, right. What else have I got on here? Let's have a look.
Wait till they get a load of me.
There you go.
Okay, that was kind of creepy. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
By the way, you can catch Behind the Panels every Sunday night on iTunes or on geekactually.com. All right, now let's get moving here. Our list of five this week is going to be five spin-off movies. I guess because we're doing Puss in Boots, it makes sense. Now, I don't know about you guys. When we come to the five movies, did you find five good ones, five bad ones? How are we doing this week?
What's this for the spin-offs for the lists? My list is based on the worst offenders.
Cool. And Richard?
You know, I tried to go for the best, and I've made a last minute change, which is questionable. So there might be one bad one in there.
Okay. And for me, I was actually having trouble finding good ones. And as you said, Josh, there are bad ones. But what I actually managed to do was make a list where it's five spin-off movies going from number five, the worst, to number one, quite watchable.
Oh.
So I've actually gone from bad to good.
I have a prediction that something with Hugh Jackman's going to turn up somewhere in these lists.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And you know what? It might be a good thing because I was thinking with the vault, when we actually do get the vault page up, it'll actually have the good and the bad because we could vault bad films. And we could very likely vault that film very quickly, and then we'd never have to mention it again. And if you're wondering what
All right, so from now on, for the next 5 weeks, every list will have that film.
Has to have that movie. And for those who are wondering what that movie is, stay tuned to the list of five. All right.
Oh, you tease, McVeigh.
We should just mention very quickly, as we have for the last few shows, that film actually is taking a hiatus from its live shows. That's why we have the crickets. Because of work schedules and so forth. We will be only an audio show for a little while longer, but you can find us on iTunes or at geekactually.com every Monday. Okay, what have we been watching, guys? I got a bit of an echo of me in the background. I do apologize if the listeners can hear that. But anyway, we'll see. We'll keep going.
What have I been watching? Well, sure, I went on a bit of a Harrison Ford tip.
As you do.
I'm sorry. I heard, okay. I heard I've gone on a bit of a Harrison Ford tip. What?
Yes. I went out and I watched Fugitive, and it was amazing because Harrison Ford is like the ultimate character that isn't actually there. That's what I've decided he is in 90s films. It's like essentially they create a great story around a character that just needs to look one way throughout the whole film.
It's kind of Harrison Ford's motif, isn't it?
Exactly. So I didn't get enough out of The Fugitive and went, oh, well, I need to find myself something out. So I actually went out and bought, for $4.40, I bought a copy of The Witness.
I'm creating the bargain bin section for you, Josh. We have to.
Totally. I'm a cheap motherfucker because I've got no goddamn money.
No, right? I understand that, but I'm just saying 4 weeks in a row now we've had these $4, $5 movies. We've got to have a theme for this.
You only want a theme so you can use the soundboard again.
Yes, that's right. Like this one. In a can. There you go.
I see. Anyway.
It's late, did I
Josh,
tell you?
Josh, what else have you been watching?
I've actually got a whole bunch of bargain bin ones for next week, but I think I may have exhausted myself out. I watched those ones. Oh, and I finally got around to watching The Howling, Dave.
Finally!
Yes.
What did you think of it in the end?
I now understand what you mean about incredibly long transformation scenes. Mm. Mm. Like, to the point... Howling. Yeah. And I was just the whole time going, what's going on? Like, why are you guys still doing that? Why are you still in the room? He's turning into a freaking wolf.
I'm a huge fan of the original Howling. And all I'm going to say to that is, let me give you a piece of my mind. Yeah. Robert Picardo is the bomb, man.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's about me.
Cool. Richard, what you been watching?
Oh, I've been watching a bit more. Nothing with Harrison Ford in it, though.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
Lame.
I know. I saw a couple of... I've seen about four things at the movie cinema this week and three at home. I saw The Ides of March, which is okay.
Oh, really? That was supposed to be his big Oscar push, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, I think Clooney's Oscar push is going to be for The Descendants, not for Ides of March.
Right.
Which I have seen The Descendants, and that's really good. It sort of starts out, look, Gosling's good, Clooney's good, but it just kind of, you've seen it all before in West Wing or Primary Colors or whatever.
Right.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, won't dwell on that too much because we'll review it when it comes out in Australia. But
absolutely.
But can I just say phenomenal?
Yeah, I agree. I concur. I saw it, several weeks back now.
Yeah, you did.
And I concur. I thought it was absolutely fabulous.
One thing I do want to mention is that apparently the director said recently that he wanted the look of the film, the color of the film, to be the color of an old man's foreskin.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this a language issue though? Because he is from the what's it? Where is he from? Sweden or something like that? Isn't he?
Yeah, he's Swedish. The guy who did Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In. That's right. So, is this a language issue? Do you think, or did he actually say that?
He probably said that.
Oh, he probably said that. Okay.
This is the guy who made Let the Right One In.
But yeah, he got the color scheme right.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a lot of.
Mind, what I would think it would look like. You know,
well, as we're pointing out, David, you are getting old.
I am. Actually, yeah, I better look down.
Moving from the sublime to the ridiculous, I also saw Tower Heist this week.
I was supposed to see this, and I couldn't get to it.
It's interesting that you played Donkey at the start of the show, because Eddie Murphy basically plays a sweary donkey.
Really?
Yeah. Gonna be putting all fucking things in my bitch. What are you talking about?
I love that Eddie Murphy though. That's the Eddie Murphy I was in love with in the
80s. No, but it is kind of Eddie Murphy from.
I'm gonna make waffles.
I'm making waffles.
Is it good though, man? Come on.
You know, the funny thing is, I quite enjoyed it, and I saw it with a large group. I went and had drinks with a large group of critics afterwards. There's a few birthdays falling around this time of year, and it's right. You know, getting on towards the end of the year, and everyone was kind of like sheepishly saying, yeah, kind of liked it actually.
You know, everybody's going to be bagging it up because it's Brett Ratner, and they're not going to want to give it its due because it's Brett Ratner.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's not going to revolutionize the world or anything, but it is, you know, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I look at that
film. It's like the Ocean's films, really.
I looked at that trailer and I said that looks like a good time. I don't think it's going to be a great film, but it looks like a good time.
But that's what you get. You know, you get what's on the box. So, and the other one, the other movie I saw, which is worth mentioning, is Albert Nobbs. It comes out on Boxing Day in Australia.
Right.
This is the one where Glenn Close plays a woman who's playing a man.
Yeah, I saw about 30 seconds of it at a screen one day.
That's right. It played at the end of some stupid rom-com we went and saw, didn't it? And they accidentally started playing that at the end. I recognize that footage.
Yeah, that numbers movie thing. What's your number?
Yeah, what's your number? Yeah. Which may end up on my worst movies of the list, worst films of the year list, actually.
I'm with you on that.
Hey, no exclusives on that.
No, sorry. It may end up.
We're still two weeks away on that one. So.
It's being considered, and I've got a few films left to watch. But yeah, look, it's. I didn't even find her performance that interesting. I actually don't even know what the hell I watched at the end of that film. It was weird.
That's just Glenn Close, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really like Glenn Close, so it's a bit of a shame to hear that.
I like Glenn Close, but this isn't a good performance for her. I mean, it's not surprising that she hasn't really been recognized in the pre-award season nominations. So some of her co-stars have been recognized, and I think that's fair.
That's a bit of a shame.
And as I was saying, mentioning before the show, there's a few others I saw, but as I mentioned before the show, I finally caught up with Troll Hunter, which was another found footage film. Kind of liked it, but I think as Josh was saying before the show, the ending kind of redeems it a little bit. But worth looking at, but have a few issues with it.
Oh, that echo is coming back again. I think it's coming from you, Richard. I think it's the feedback from you. But that's okay. It's not drastic. It's just a little bit. Hopefully it'll settle itself down.
Not a lot I can do.
No, not a lot you can do unless we just turn you off and turn you back on again or get rid of you altogether. Yeah.
That just sounds mean, Dave. Stop playing favorite.
Josh, you know you're always my favorite.
Oh, that's sweet. Moving right along.
You know I'm the ring in.
All right, moving right along. I actually saw a film that Joe, Richard and I actually talked briefly about this just the other day. I had a chance to see Last Man Standing again, which is the Bruce Willis film, which is basically a remake of Kira Kurosawa's Yojimbo set in the, I think it's the 20s, I believe it is, 20s or 30s, about a lone drifter who rolls into town and has to take on both sides or basically makes them play against each other. Not bad. Yojimbo's a better film. But it's not a bad film.
And so it's Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the problem with the film is that Walter Hill, the director, plays the entire thing one note all the way through it. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks like this. There isn't a single person who doesn't. But I also love the fact that nobody ever runs out of bullets.
Yeah, well, the modern Western's kind of taken on a different turn since Leone, sort of revolutionized the Western in the 60s. But in the modern Western's, a lot more introspective and has a sort of revisionist view of history, and Last Man Standing was just kind of throwback meets gangster film, and none of it sort of really gelled for
me. What you just said there is throwback. It's exactly right. It actually feels a little derivative all the way through it. Yeah. You're kind of watching it going, there's nothing here that I haven't seen before, and I don't know if I actually felt this way back in the, I think it came out in 96 or something like that. I actually think I felt that way when I saw it the first time. Because it didn't leave much of an impact on me. And I remember when I was watching it this time, thinking back to what it was like watching. I saw it on VHS. I never saw it at the cinema. And I remember feeling the same way I did this time. So I don't think the film has much impact.
Well, I think the other reason that I hate that film, man, is, I don't hate it, but I just did nothing for me, is that I don't connect to any character in that film. Everybody's a prick. Therefore, at the end of it, you don't care what happens.
Exactly. And Yojimbo, the source material, you care about Toshiro Mifune. You actually you actually follow him, and you actually are fascinated by his behaviors and what he's doing and how he makes this whole town play off itself. You don't get that from Bruce Willis at all.
Likewise, Clint Eastwood as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Because Clint Eastwood in that version of it, it's an interesting fun fact. Sergio Leone was actually sued by Akira Kurosawa's company for being so close to his film. He didn't acknowledge that Yojimbo was a source when he originally made it.
Oh, that's a bit rough.
Eventually, he ended up paying the Japanese film company money because they'd lost. But then ultimately, it's funny because Kurosawa was in turn influenced by so many of John Ford's westerns. So, you know, go figure. Mm-hmm. But Clint Eastwood, at the start of that, of Fistful of Dollars, sort of walks in and does that whole speech of that thing, you know, I don't think it's nice you laughing at my mule that way, you know. And you've instantly got all those kind of nice little moments in there. You never get any of that Last Man Standing.
No. Last Man Standing has no humor, period.
None.
Speaking of humor, though, the other thing I've been watching this week is catching up on the current season. I've been watching a lot of sitcoms. There is actually,
really?
Yeah,
you?
Yeah, me, Dave? Always. There's a current sitcom, though, that I just want to talk about because it's probably in threat of being axed, and I actually am quite enjoying it. It's called Suburgatory, which is basically about a big city girl who gets uprooted and pushed out into the suburbs of New York by her father because he's worried about her upbringing. And, of course, the suburbs are probably even weirder than the city. And it's actually quite funny, and it's actually got one of the minor characters in it. He comes in every couple of episodes. It's actually Alan Tudyk.
Nice.
And he's playing a cosmetic dentist. But the show is actually, it's one of those sitcoms that has no laugh track. It is actually just like it's relying on itself to be funny. It's not telling you to be funny. And it is actually quite humorous because of the portrayal of these weird suburbanites. I think I've talked about it briefly a few weeks back when it first started, and just thought I'd just bring it up again because it is actually fairly strong. It's actually stayed fairly strong, but I don't think it's getting much of an audience. So people need to give it a shot because it's not bad. Shall we move into a review, guys?
Let's do it.
Let's do this, huh? This week we're reviewing Puss in Boots.
Oh,
yeah, that one. Directed by Chris Miller and written by David H. Steinberg, John Zack, and Tom Wheeler, from a story by Will Davies and Brian Lynch, which is based on a character by Charles Perrault. Is that enough?
Well done.
It stars the voices of Antonio Banderas, Salma Hayek, Billy Bob Thornton, Amy Sedaris, and Zach Galifianakis. And this is the official synopsis from DreamWorks Paramount. They say, long before he even met Shrek, the notorious fighter, lover, and outlaw Puss in Boots becomes a hero when he sets off on an adventure with the tough and street-smart Kitty Softpaws and the mastermind Humpty Dumpty to save his town. This is the true story of the cat, the myth, the legend, the boots. Source, holy DreamWorks Paramount. Holy free hollies. So let's have a look at the trailer, and then we will talk about this. So here's Puss in Boots.
One little, please.
What are you doing here, senor? Did you lose your ball of yarn?
You made the cat angry.
You do not want to make the cat angry. I protect the innocent.
I am Puss in Boots.
Meow. Is it hiding here? Or is it me? Puss in Boots. Legend tales of an ancient treasure. Hidden for centuries and guarded by giants in a castle in the sky. Holy Frijoles. Whoever finds this treasure will be given riches beyond imagination.
Show him the golden eggs.
No!
Please, you have shown enough.
Do not worry, I will protect you.
Protect me? And who's gonna protect you?
Is it true a cat always lands on its feet?
No! That is just a rumor spread by dogs!
Fear me if you dare. I hate cats.
That's not what your mama said.
My thirst for adventure will never be quenched. Let's go.
right.
Oh.
And now you know where I got it for the soundboard.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of know what Richard's opinion is. And Josh, you are the complete wild card here. We have not discussed this at all. So, Josh, what did you think?
Why do you always stop me? Like, can we start with a massive disclaimer, which is that I hate comedy?
That's fair.
Which means that I'm always going to be the lowest tier on any comedy review based on that. But yeah, look, it's visually stunning. I think that there's no other way to put that. It's got some great moments to it. It's got some really interesting design. I love the kinds of cinema it's throwing back to. I really, really respect. My problem with the film is simply this. Essentially, all of the Shrek films are a basic moral plot point strung in with an adventure story, and I'm four times through it, and I'm just over it. Like, as far as fun goes, and as far as every time people are running around and shooting guns and, you know, sword fighting and so on and so forth, love that stuff. But the comedy fell flatter than any of the films for me. Like, I didn't laugh once. In fact, none of my cinema laughed at all throughout most of the humor. But every now and then there's these moments of gold. Little tiny things where they throw just to a small joke really worked, whereas the larger jokes or the setup jokes didn't work for me at all. So, yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. Thought it was okay. Wouldn't go to it again. Our kids will love it, though.
Fair enough. Okay.
Oh. So you guys can go and be nice about it.
Okay,
now.
Richard, what did you think?
Look,
let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, my reaction to Josh's review is basically the ooh cat is on.
Oh.
Yeah, because I really loved it. And I've got to say, my disclaimer on this is that I have spent a lot of time with this movie because I was lucky enough to interview the director not once but twice on this tour. Don't ask me how that happened.
Did you get different results each time?
I got different results each time, and I spoke to him a lot about those influences and about what he wanted to make different about the film. And I really do appreciate it. And one of the things I did start with was the same as Josh. I thought, I've seen this four times before. What am I going to get new? But I actually went in there really wanting to enjoy it because I love the idea of Puss in Boots. The marketing campaign had been brilliant. And then I went in there and I just loved the hell out of it. I thought the humor was spot on for me, and I do love comedy and I do love animation. The humor levels were spot on. I thought it brought a lot more to the table than certainly the last two Shrek films. And I think the way Chris Miller put it was that if you think of the Shrek films as the kind of Northern European fairy tales, then think of Puss in Boots as the film from the South. And you get all these other sort of classical influences as well. He said that he sees a lot of classical cinematic figures. You get Clint Eastwood in there. You got Errol Flynn in there, a bit of Indiana Jones or James Bond. He also said, and Chris Miller joked, he said Zorro, but you get that for free with Antonio.
And
I love that. And I picked all that up. That's good because I love all those little references in there. But those little asides that you mentioned, Josh, the few moments that you found funny, I love that. I thought they were just back to back. I just thought there were so many of those. The ooh cat, which we've joked about a bit already, I just thought that was pure brilliance.
I love the fact that every time he flicked his claws out, somebody's pants fell down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was just little things like the way he was lapping the milk, you know. And the thing
that was one of my favorite jokes of the whole thing because it just totally threw out what was a very serious scene. And that's what I mean. All that stuff worked really well for me.
Now, with the thing I love about animation, and this is something that The Simpsons always was really good at, was when you have animated characters and they're animals. And they're acting like humans, but then they act like humans. They act like animals or animated characters when you least expect them to. And this is what I think that Puss in Boots does really well. And I think, but the animation itself is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really interesting finding that clip from Shrek 2 to open the show. It's really interesting how even just the character of Puss in Boots has developed over the years, because he's so much more detailed and has so much more life in him in his own film now years down the track, because CG has come so far. It's remarkable. I mean, just look at that clip. Even his hat is a single texture. It doesn't even have any sort of fiber to it at all. You know, whereas in the new film, he feels real. He's fantastic.
And I love the character designs, like Jack and Jill.
Oh, Jack and Jill, great.
It kind of looked like an old Looney Tunes cartoon, or something. That anything Disney's done set in a bayou.
And did we notice one of our favorite directors, Guillermo del Toro's little cameo in there?
Yes,
as the voice of the Comandante.
Apparently, he was a fair bit involved with the production, because he was the executive producer. Miller was saying that he actually wanted. They brought him in every now and then. They said it was great. He was kind of like this guy that they went to get like kind of opinions. You like this? And he said, No. I don't want to get too close to the movie. I don't want to fall in love with it. You know, which was the story he told. But and I think that there's just this offbeat sort of thing to it. And Shrek always had that. I know Shrek was always full of those non sequiturs and that kind of anachronistic comedy. But I think this kind of creates its world a little more cohesively than the last two Shrek films, certainly. And for me, it's much more of a rounded film. In a year when animation has been patchy, we've had Cars 2 was a film in search of an identity. Rio was something that I enjoyed, but we'd seen it all before. And the only exception, and probably the closest thing you can compare this to, is Rango. Which is the other Western animated film that came out this year. Now, Rango is in a league of its own. It's brilliant. But I think that this, for a spin-off, does a marvelous job of maintaining why we love that character in the first place and actually giving him a story and a funny one at the same time.
I definitely have to give them credit for that. I think that was one of the shining things about this film, was the fact that when we look through at this list of films and we were looking at spin-offs do not have a good history.
No.
And this definitely does stand alone. Like, I would never call this Shrek Puss in Boots, you know what I mean? Like, this is an entirely separate world and a definite feeling of its own.
Agreed.
Definitely agree with that. Yeah. Dave?
Look, I'm gonna go with Richard mostly on this. I actually really had no hope for this film. The trailers were leaving me a little bit cold. I like the viral trailers. I like the send up of I'm on a horse and stuff like that. But the actual trailers, I kind of looked at and went, it looks like a kid's film. It doesn't look like an animated film that is going to have a broad audience scope. And on top of that, I haven't liked the Shrek films since Shrek 2. I quite like Shrek 1, I actually really like Shrek 1. I quite like Shrek 2. I really like the introduction of Puss in Boots in Shrek 2. But Shrek 3, I really didn't like very much, and I didn't even bother to see Shrek 4 because my son told me it was pretty much more of the same.
I saw Shrek 4 recently. I just want to quickly jump in there, and Puss in Boots, as depicted in the fourth Shrek, is quite funny.
Okay, fair enough.
Because in the alternate universe, he's overweight and he's a bit of a diva. So.
So I was actually really not that keen for this. And I thought, okay, it's going to be – for me, it's in the same kind of league of interest as, say, something like Alvin and the Chipmunks 3. Right?
Oh, God.
Wow. It really was. But then I saw it. And I realized that this is actually a really funny film, and I actually really enjoyed it. And I'm sitting there watching it going, this is not quite what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was actually a really charming, fun film that kept me engaged. I really like its sense of humor. I think it actually it has gone back in many ways to the original Shrek, to that kind of irreverent sense of humor where it wasn't just trying to pander. It was actually having some fun with itself. I like the fact that there were all these obtuse, strange little sight gags like the ooh cat, and every time he flexed his claws, somebody's pants would fall down. He didn't actually did anything. It's just like the action of flexing his claws would do that,
There was a lot of adult humor in there too.
Oh, I like the golden eggs. No, I've seen enough.
I really love that character who kind of like has the whole story tattooed on his body.
Yes, I thought that was really
and it's
cute.
Like different parts. But there's just little things in it. Like, there's just not Fritz the cat by any means, but the opening shot is of this sleeping white cat, and Puss in Boots is he's getting dressed.
Yes.
And it's like, you're like, oh, I will always remember you. You know, it's like, I didn't expect that.
No. Yeah. And I mean, Jack and Jill are particularly repulsive characters, you know, and they're a lot of fun to watch. And there's a lot of the stuff that comes out of Humpty Dumpty's mouth is even very kind of adult.
Well, it's Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis, of course. And, you know, I love the humor of things like he does to tell his story, and he tells the long story of how he became where he came from, and we cut back and she's asleep.
You know? Yeah. you really don't have to.
No, but that's the kind of humor that was actually kind of falling flat on me, because it was just like I telegraphed that like an hour before they actually did the joke. You know, it's like a lot of it was very predictable humor. That's why I found the little stuff that much funnier, because it was like it came out of nowhere. But again, I think I'm in the minority for this.
For me, it was a surprise, and I think that's why I liked it. I came home and my son said, "What was it like?" He had to go somewhere, so he couldn't come with me. And I said, "It was actually surprisingly not bad, you know." And I don't think it's a masterpiece of animation, and I think there have been many better animated films. But it is a film I would watch again, and I would probably buy it on Blu-ray, you know, because it looks beautiful, and I love the soundtrack. Henry Jackman's soundtrack is fabulous, you know. And overall, it just has this real sense of fun to it. And so I think that's really what, if you just want to go and have a bit of fun, this is a film to go see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So that's all I really got for it, because I don't think, I mean, there's not a lot negative I'm going to say about it, because there's not a lot negative to go. If anything, the only thing that's going against this film would be the fact that it's maybe skirting on the edges of not being that original, you know what I mean? Because we've seen the character already in three Shrek films.
And this is the thing, I mean, the fourth Shrek film was meant to be the final film. And they made a big deal of that in the publicity. But, you know, as we know from, you know, Friday the 13th, the final chapter, Final Destination, or even Star Trek, the Final Frontier, maybe even the entire Final Fantasy series. The word "final" is a finite thing in Hollywood.
Yeah,
and it is maybe the final Shrek film, but I don't think we're going to see the end of spin-off movies. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Donkey film.
I'm actually kind of waiting for that, and I kind of dread that.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I don't think that one would work, but I am loving. If there's one thing I do love about it, it's I love the concept of taking these very traditional fairy tales and just mushing them all together, and I have no problem with them trying to continue that.
That was actually
what I loved. I loved the fact that it was basically a Western, but then you had Jack and Jill, and then you had the Beanstalk, and you know, it's like that sort of stuff really worked for me. And I hope that they keep doing that.
This has
definitely given me enough love for the series to be like, if they do another spin-off, I'll go watch it.
Yeah, and it's what the Shrek series and the DreamWorks people have done very well, which is turn fairy tales on their head. You know, I mean, that's what the basis of Shrek is, with the ugly stepsisters actually being basically men in drag. You know,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
A couple of years ago, I'd written DreamWorks off completely. I'm a massive Disney and Disney Pixar fan, and I wouldn't have given DreamWorks the time of day. I mean, think back when they were doing things like Shark Tale.
Oh, I know.
You know, terrible, terrible things like that. And they're in a position where they're making some of the best, if not the best animation in the world, right up there with Pixar. What? Given that Pixar's film this year, as we've already mentioned, was so bad.
Absolutely. And when you look at last year, and you've got Toy Story 3, which was amazing, but you got How to Train Your Dragon, which was, quite frankly, one of my favorite films of the year. And you go, wow, they're really up there, you know?
Yeah. No, I think, look, you know, I think they've come a long way. And Puss in Boots may not be original story-wise, but as an overall product, I think it's hard to fault.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, yeah, go see it. I recommend it.
Me too.
Yeah, and it looks good in 3D too, by the way. So
it looks great in 3D, and I think it's more aimed at the kids or people that are just looking for something fun and don't want to have to think about it. But with
people
that don't usually find movies like this funny, avoid it.
Fair enough. Let's move into some news. What do you reckon?
Yeah, you want to.
When is a Michael Bay film not a Michael Bay film? That's what I want to ask at this point. Hasbro's new adaptation has come out. Well, not come out, but it's the new trailer has come out. We actually played the first trailer here several weeks back now. The new trailer for Battleship hit the web this week. This is the Peter Berg film. Now, I actually thought Peter Berg was a better director than this, quite frankly, but I don't know. This trailer, I mean, it looks, it's all spectacular. It's all fighting robots and aliens, and I mean, it quite literally looks like another Transformers film.
They played this in front of Tower Heist the other night.
Oh, so you've seen this already. Well, let's run this real quick. We may actually cut this a bit short because a lot of it doesn't have dialogue. So we'll run a bit, and if it's getting boring, I'll stop it. It will be embedded. By the time this show comes out, it will be embedded on geekactually.com. You'll be able to see it there. So here is Battleship.
Contact 8,000 yards.
Is this some kind of exercise?
Probably. I want to have this thing thoroughly investigated.
We'll get a team in the water right away.
Get me on it.
Don't think that's a good idea!
Got it, Chief.
Get out of there, Alex.
That's not good.
My dad said they come. He said we ain't alone. He said one day we'd find them. Find us.
All right, we're going to leave that right there because it just goes on and on and on and on with lots more explosions. Look, visual effects-wise, it looks really good. I mean, the visual effects look fantastic, but we've seen it all before.
Can I make a prediction?
Sure. It's going to be
a moment towards the end of that film where Liam Neeson is standing on the deck of the alien ship, you know, pointing his gun or something down at the alien commander going, "You sunk my battleship."
Well, it won't be Liam Neeson though, because they actually spoil in the trailer. They say,
"Oh yeah, they're right. Sorry,
it dead.
Won't be Liam Neeson. It'll be his name then. Want it to be Liam Neeson telling the aliens he's got a very particular set of skills."
Look, you know what my problem with is when I watch it, I don't think Transformers.
I really
don't. For me, it's a collaboration of everything I hated about Skyrim. Skyline, and everything I hate about Battle for Los Angeles, crammed into one movie, put on the ocean, and then thrown a board game into the mix as well, and I'm just sitting there going, disaster. Like, that's all that goes through my mind is disaster. Like, I have no idea how you can make this movie even plausible or fun.
Me personally, this trailer looks like a mashup of Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Dude, if you showed me this and we hadn't done all the news stories about the lead up to this point of view, if you showed me this trailer, I'd be like, that's a really good gag. Like, I would literally be like, that's not real. They would never make a movie about that. That's just stupid.
And just think, in a year's time, we've got to look forward to Ouija and Candyland. So,
see, Ouija has the potential for being something.
It doesn't, really. It doesn't.
Really?
No.
I disagree.
It's been done. It's called Paranormal Activity. It's been done.
No, dude, there was a film a while back. It was a British film that did Ouija boards, and it was fantastic. Yeah. It wasn't a particularly good film, but you can make a really good film based around a Ouija board.
All right,
discount that one yet.
I know. So once again, it's been done.
But everything's been done. You got to find your original.
Yeah, you know what? Hasbro had a real hit with Transformer toys. Let's step away from Hasbro now. You know what I mean? It's like all the board games, they've literally optioned all the board games from Hasbro. I think it's time to step away from them. You know what I mean?
I want the Hungry Hungry Hippo movie.
That's got to be coming
soon. I'm down, man. Yeah, buy tickets in advance when that comes out.
Yeah. All right. So look, Battleship, I think the general consensus is, as visually stunning as they want to make that trailer look, there's nothing we haven't seen with Michael Bay already destroying cities and boats and everything else. So there's nothing we've already seen before. And so what we're relying on now is actually a good film, and we're not seeing that either.
I want it to be The Abduction of 2012.
That would be great.
Yeah.
We're not going to get it, but that would be great. Moving right along, some slightly better news is Star Trek II news. Peter, call me Murphy Weller, has been cast in Star Trek II as an unknown character at this point.
Can I correct you? It's the untitled Star Trek sequel.
Yeah. All right, the untitled Star Trek sequel.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that at some stage in this film, he's going to get shot up into tiny little pieces.
Rebuilt.
Yeah, and then rebuild as an android or a Borg.
Oh, there you go. Let's bring the Borg into it.
It's probably not going to happen, but it's typecasting. It's that great kind of like typecasting where I just look at him. I'm like, you're just going to get shot to pieces. That's just the first place I go when I look at him.
The other bit of Star Trek news that came out this week, which I love because it came out and got redacted in the same week, which was that they were saying that Benicio del Toro had been cast as the villain of the piece, and of course the nerd world went crazy. Everybody's basically going, it's Khan, he's going to be playing Khan, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And Benicio del Toro came out later in the week and basically said, I'm not in Star Trek.
Yeah, well, actually, it was a really weird thing. He was in the casting process for ages, and then they said it's Khan, but then Joss Whedon immediately got back and said, no, it's not Khan.
Not Joss Whedon. You don't mean Joss Whedon.
Not Joss Whedon. Sorry, J.J. Abrams.
I don't think I've met J.J. Abrams.
God almighty. Said it's not going to be Khan, and so the nerd world calmed down. And then Benicio del Toro said he's off the thing. He was offered the role, and he was right up till in negotiations right up until the end. And then there was a disagreement over money or, you know, creative differences.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about in a minute in another story. I think it's really interesting that the timing of his announcement sort of coincides with Benicio del Toro off there. I wouldn't be surprised if Murphy is going to be the villain.
Murphy.
Dude, come on, let's not lie. That's all we can think about.
It is, absolutely.
He's going to be the villain of the piece. And look, you know, I think, you know, I was disappointed when they originally said it was going to be Khan, because they've given themselves the get out of jail free card with that first fantastic reboot, which was kind of like,
right. Yep,
you've got your universe over there. We've taken the ball, we've run over here with it. You've still got your universe, we can do whatever the hell we want.
Absolutely.
With your characters, without your characters, we can do what we want now.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you as well. They don't need to go emulating the other films. They can do anything they want now. So.
And if they do, we need to see a completely original take on it. Like, you know, if Khan turns up, maybe he's a minor character, you know.
You need to keep up the fan love, but not go overboard. They basically need to redo what they did with the first film.
And you know what the nerds aren't taking into account? And I say the nerds affectionately because I'm one of them. But you know what they're not taking into account? They're all saying, oh, it's going to be Khan, so it's going to be like Wrath of Khan. No, it won't be, because it's actually set in original Star Trek timeline. We're way back then. It'll be like the Space Seed, which is actually very slow, and Khan isn't the Khan that we have in Wrath of Khan. He's a very different character. And I think people are kind of forgetting the fact that what timeline we're in. You know what I mean?
Mm.
This isn't 20 years later at this point. You know?
And Peter Wellwish, when I did actually play a character in a few episodes of Enterprise.
Did he really?
No way, really?
Did he really?
Yeah. I get that? I'm sure I read that story somewhere.
Now, the reason why I say did he really is because Enterprise wasn't a show that I actually watched a lot of.
Yeah, no, he turned up in a couple of episodes. I hope that story's right. I'm sure I read that. I mean, he's still been busy over the last few years. He was in a documentary that I reviewed recently. It was William S. Burroughs' documentary, which, of course... He has a William S. Burroughs connection from being in Naked Lunch, of course.
Right.
I'm sure I read. He was a special guest star in a 2005 episode of Enterprise, which So I don't think he's going to play the same character, despite the fact that chronologically it could work. But Yeah, look, Enterprise is not a bad series, by the way. It started off really badly, and then got better around the third and fourth season before the ending.
I say it got better around third and fourth season when they cancelled it.
Yeah. But I mean, look, you know, it was a misguided thing from the start. You know, it was misguided because they were doing a prequel to the original series, and we didn't want to see that world. We wanted to see the further adventures, but. You know, yeah. I think J.J. Abrams proved that you can go back and still tell fresh stories, which
I agreed.
Let's through this next one really quickly because we actually covered this in great detail on Behind the Panels, the podcast. So we'll just kick through this very quickly because it's just an add-on to that story. In Behind the Panels, we talked about the fact that Patty Jenkins has walked from directing Thor 2, citing creative differences. What was interesting this week was that Marvel has now talked about two new directors who they're kind of courting. One is Alan Taylor and the other one is Daniel Minahan. Both big names, as we can tell. They're both TV directors. And they've both...
Well, we said this on the show that we'd like to see someone smaller.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is very common for Marvel. So
and they're both Game of Thrones people, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. They're both Game of Thrones veterans, and Game of Thrones is really well put together. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Apparently the first director on Thor 2 was a guy called Brian Kirk, who was also a Game of Thrones director, and he basically, I don't know what happened to him, but he ended up not on the project and Patty Jenkins took over. So yeah, Game of Thrones seems to be the place to go at the moment. So we'll wait and see on that. Thor 2 is actually in a little bit of trouble at the moment, so we'll see. But I got to get onto this next story though, because this is just a it made me laugh hysterically, and B it made me angry as hell. So I'm gonna talk about this a little bit because I think this is the most obscure thing I've seen all week. That reliable, fair, and balanced news organization known as Fox. Basically came out in a show called Media Matters. Media Matters for America, actually, is what the show is called on the Fox Network. Basically slamming the new Muppet movie, slamming the Muppets, basically saying that it was pushing the liberal agenda. And not only that,
Believe I missed that.
I know, pushing the liberal agenda and brainwashing our children. I'm going to play you a little bit of this. This is I'm going to leave the mics open. We can talk during this, but this is the first 2 minutes. This is the introduction of the show. I have this, and then I have a really short clip because as another clip, it's actually very long. It's the whole show, and you can find this on our link. But there's another clip a little bit later down in the interview, which is this woman comes on, and I've got to play you. She's only like 30 seconds, but I've got to play you what she said because it made me laugh. And it's actually his answer to her that made me laugh. But anyway, here's the first 2 minutes of the introduction of this story. And see if also, I want to point out, I don't think they've actually seen the film, okay? Because listen to the way they describe the bad guy, okay? So here it is. Here's the clip from Fox.
Yes, and then, when he thought they were alone, he said,
"There's oil under this studio, see? I'm gonna tear it to the ground, see? Sweet, sweet oil, see?"
People still talk like that?
Maybe that's just how he sounded in my head. Either way, we've gotta find Kermit. He'll know what to do.
Welcome back to Follow the Money. The Muppets are back and being terrorized by an evil oil executive in their new movie. Liberal Hollywood depicting a successful businessman as evil, that's not new. Joining me now, Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center. Dan, let's point this out. This
successful businessman, yes,
evil
that's what he was.
Man that he is called Tex Richman. Go ahead, sir.
Right, now no one's seeing the joke in that, right? I love the way they pause. It's like everybody's devoid of the fact that that is the biggest joke in the world.
And they've clearly never seen a single Muppets movie at all. This is basically the plot line of every Muppets movie.
Absolutely, but I also love the fact, the reason why I don't think they've actually seen it, we'll come back to the clip in a minute, but the reason why I don't think they've seen it is because he actually says the evil Muppet in the film is named Tex Richman. Tex Richman is actually played by a man. It's Chris Cooper.
He's Tex Richman, and he has his own rap song.
That's right, and it's Chris Cooper. It's not a Muppet at all.
Also, like they say, you know, I love how it's kind of like, you know, they depict a successful businessman. Yeah, this is a successful businessman whose plan is to bulldoze the Muppet studio.
That's what I was trying to explain to my son, actually.
Trick them out of getting the studio unless they pay $10 million by midnight. Again, it's the storyline of every single one of these movies done incredibly.
But I was also trying to explain this to my son because I was saying they're just saying. The rich man is portrayed as evil. No, the fact that he's rich is not the issue. The fact that he's a nasty piece of work is the issue. You know? All right, let's continue on. Here's the successful businessman. By the way, this was actually a show called Follow the Money. I said it wrong before. This clip is from another show about the media, which is why it's being shown. The actual show on Fox is called Follow the Money, which you got to love that in itself. All right, anyway, so here's the successful businessman talking about it. And listen to what he actually has to say about... Roland Emmerich's Day After Tomorrow. Okay.
Stoop to, you know, manipulate your kids to convince them, give the anti-corporate message. I mean, this is a Muppet movie, for goodness sakes. The only thing green that should be up on that screen should be Kermit the Frog.
And so what's actually going on here? I mean, I'll put it out there. Is liberal Hollywood using class warfare to kind of brainwash our kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been doing it for decades. I mean, Hollywood, the left, the media, they hate the oil industry. They hate corporate America. And so...
At this point, I'd just like to interject and say they hate... The liberal Hollywood hates corporate America. It's a Disney film. They are corporate America.
I don't think there is a single Hollywood studio that is not owned by a major corporation.
Absolutely. So I think they are corporate America, guys. So anyway, let's move on. Let's also point out that Fox owns... Fox, which is a major studio in liberal Hollywood, which actually... anyway.
Mind-blowing.
Anyway, here we go.
You'll see all these movies attacking it, whether it's Cars 2, which was another kid's movie, the George Clooney movie, Syriana, There Will Be Blood... All these movies attack the oil industry. None of them, you know, reminding people that what oil means for most people, which is fuel to, you know, light a hospital or heat your home or maybe fuel an ambulance to get you to the hospital if you need that. And they don't want to tell that story.
The heartwarming story of There Will Be Blood.
I think he's missing the point of half of these movies. All right, look, we're going to leave him there. There's a great part at the end of this where the host actually says, "Oh, wait, let's see if I can just fast forward this and see the host." Well, the host cuts in afterwards and says, here we go. Hold on.
On poor old Mother Earth.
All right, okay. Dan, I'm sorry, we ran out of time. I'd love to bring the story up again. But I remember when I was a little kid, we were poor. We were dead broke, in fact. And my parents would see someone wealthy driving by and be like, "See that guy? He started a business. He worked hard. You can be like that someday." Not pointing the finger at Tex rich man and saying he's a bad guy. Dan.
See that guy? We could be like that guy.
We could.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, look, you know, if I end up like Chris Cooper, I'll be happy. Yeah. Tex Richmond in the movie is also, I think they've missed the point. He's someone who's cursed with a childhood disease, which was he was unable to laugh. And you know, I think they've sort of missed that in their rush to label liberal Hollywood. I think, look, you know, Kermit has struggled as well. He knows it's not easy being green.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for this, Bimbo?
Okay. Oh, yeah, let's do it.
All right. This is my favorite part of this whole thing because somehow Fox had to bring Obama into this. Okay. You know? It's not bad enough that the Muppets are there. We've got to spin this liberal agenda around and brainwash our kids. So this Bimbo comes on and she brings it right back to Sesame Street now. Okay. So here we go.
What's going on here?
Well, it is. It's brainwashing in the most obvious form, right? I just wish liberals could leave little kids alone. Why does there have to be some kind of political message? I thought Sesame Street was supposed to be sharing and being nice to people. But over the years, they've gotten more liberal. I mean, just a couple months ago, we talked about this on The Five. Remember they had the Hungry Muppet, mm-hmm. the Starving Muppet? Mm-hmm. Well, you look out the there, we've got Muppet, Medicaid. Yeah. There's a record number of people on food stamps. We have SCHIP. We have WIC. There's all these programs out there to take care of hungry kids. Why would that Muppet be starving?
Yeah. That's right, because in the world today, there are no starving kids anymore.
At all.
Nobody's homeless and nobody's starving. You know, hang on, we're not finished yet. Hold that thought. Andrea Tart, what are your name? Andrea Tartakis or whatever your name is, you ignorant slut. All right, here we go. Let's hear the end of her, and it's what he says about Obama that kills me. Here we go.
Dr. Ellman, maybe they should have the hungry Muppets, the food stamp Muppets, and have the evil person being the Obama administration or Obama. After all, under Obama, food stamp usage has gone up 40%.
Well, there you go. There's the Muppet movie I want to see with a Muppet Obama being the bad guy.
If we don't get food stamps by midnight.
Oh man, I was watching this going, I can't believe. Katie had to leave the room. She's saying it's making her angry. I'm sorry. We've just probably pissed off a whole bunch of conservatives. But I'm sorry.
Sorry. If you're a conservative who buys into that, fuck you. I don't want to know you.
When did the word liberal become a dirty word? You know,
I mean? That's the thing I loved about it. It's like they were using liberal as synonymous. It was like, you know, I thought they were about peace and sharing, but they've become more liberal.
And yeah, exactly. And just for our Australian listeners, we're not talking about capital L liberal like John Howard's party. We're talking about liberal as in liberal ideas, liberal thinkers. You know what I mean? It's small L liberal. And when did that become a dirty word? I don't understand what's happened to the world.
Sesame Street has been the most progressive show. Like, I mean, it's not the Muppets, but Sesame Street, which they reference, they open the door. When it came out originally, it was designed to teach children about social inequality, yes, but it was also designed to be kind of the street where a lot of people might be living, the sort of people who would be watching television for their education. It was designed to mirror that. So a lot of the issues that do come up because the kids who are watching it have those same problems. It was on an average street, and it was probably the first major kids program to feature African-American families just owning shops and hanging out and, you know, learning with all the Muppets on the street.
Agreed.
You know, and it was a brilliant show. I've watched this recent documentary on the history of it. You know, it's such a great show. As you said, when did that become a dirty word? When did being all about sharing and caring and being liberal become a separate thing? I don't know.
I don't know what's happened to the world. It's just bizarre. The part that we missed that about Roland Emmerich, because we kind of skipped past it, I love when that guy is actually describing all the liberal Hollywood movies that are brainwashing us. He actually says the Al Gore inspired Day After Tomorrow. And all I can think is, it wasn't inspired by Al Gore. Al Gore had the same idea. It's called global warming.
Al Gore was before Al Gore. Al Gore. Yeah, what about the right, the conservative run media? You know, it's like we're going to have if there are any liberal news networks saying, I'm a little sick of the Fox News Network running this conservative agenda they've been pushing against liberal Hollywood for so many years. No, if you complain about the right, if you complained about Fox News, and even when The Simpsons made a gag about Fox News being conservative and evil, they had a go at that as well. So, it's like, no, you're not allowed to say anything. We can bash the liberal Hollywood as much as we like, but if you say a single word about Fox, you're just trying to crush our opinion. You.
I found that entire thing, as I say, on one hand, hysterical. On the other hand, there's a lot of people who are watching faux news and thinking that it's real.
Yeah, no, this is what worries me the most. Fox News is probably one of the biggest news networks in the U.S. and around the world.
And people take it as gospel, and they listen to that, and they go, oh, are they really brainwashing our children? Oh, we better not let them see the Muppets. It's like, oh, get over it. You know, what is your problem?
For the record, The Muppets is the most joy-inspiring movie of the year.
I agree with you 100%. It's interesting, though, that not everybody has felt that way. Apparently, Frank Oz doesn't like it very much. So,
well, from what I understand, he was basing that on, like, pre-release stuff, like when he saw a few fart shoes jokes.
Yeah, but he turned down the option to be in it. That's not him doing Miss Piggy and Fozzie.
No, I know. But he hasn't done it for a few years now. It's there's been a lot of... one of the other movies I watched this week I didn't mention was A Very Merry Muppet Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a direct-to-TV thing in 2002. And a lot of the original... Jim Henson's workshop was involved, but a lot of the original voice actors were not. And they haven't... Frank Oz hasn't done it for a few years now.
The funniest thing I've heard all week has to be on Scott Johnson's The Morning Stream, another podcast I listen to, which I quite enjoy, where they made the observation that Frank Oz, his moral stance was that he didn't want to do a voice in The Muppet, but he did do the prequel trilogy of Star Wars.
Yeah.
So, go. Way to go.
Sorry, I got a little riled up there. I'll calm down now.
Okay, let's calm that down and let's have a bit of fun. We're going to skip a couple of stories because we're running a little bit long here. But I do want to do this story because I thought Hollywood has been considered creatively bankrupt for some time now.
And liberal,
apparently. this article on Slash Film caught my eye because they're basically saying, here are some of the things you've got to look forward to in the future. And I was looking at this and I went, wow, yeah. Okay. So do we remember the Adam Sandler film Grown Ups that came out, I think, 2 years ago now or last year?
Last year,
yeah, and you know that. No. I actually finally saw it and it's...
No, I don't acknowledge it.
Well, guess what? Grown Ups 2 is on its way.
I have heard this.
The Lincoln Lawyer. I quite enjoyed The Lincoln Lawyer. How about The Lincoln Lawyer 2?
Fuck yeah, I'm
even
in.
Lincolner.
And Lincoln, you know how we're getting Journey 2.
Lincoln with vengeance.
Yeah.
we're getting Journey 2 next year, which is the Mysterious Island. Well, apparently they've already gone and signed up and we're getting Journey 3, a sequel to Journey 2, and Journey 2 hasn't even come out yet.
Awesome.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's backing your cards.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite, though, of the whole lot, though, has to be the fact that they are doing The Birdcage 2.
Oh, fuck yeah.
No, I love The Birdcage, don't get me wrong, but 15 years after the first one, they're all going to come back and do another one. Why?
Well, to be fair, it was a sequel to La Cage aux Folles.
No, absolutely, but they were really close together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. In fact, they had two sequels. So, you know, it could be interesting, though, to explore those characters 15 years after.
Only if Hank Azaria is coming back as the...
Claire Forlani's not really done much lately.
No, that's true. That's true. Oh, she did Camelot. She was in Camelot. Oh,
okay. No, I have... Well, I mean real things, not television.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, no,
wait a minute.
You did.
Wait a minute.
No, TV's where it's at the moment.
Absolutely. I think she made the smart move to go to TV. Yeah. But when we think of Hollywood bankruptcy, creative bankruptcy... I think the Farrelly brothers' new movie might just have topped it because this week the first trailer for The Three Stooges came out.
Oh, fuck me.
I know. And I'm going to torture you with it because I'm going to share my pain. Now, when I first heard about them doing a Three Stooges movie, I thought it was a biopic. And if you remember, it was actually going to be Jim Carrey and Benicio del Toro and Sean Penn as the Three Stooges. An interesting cast, I must say. The way it was being talked about was like, you know, this was going to be the story of the Three Stooges. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Now we have basically three unknowns. The guy who played Jack in Will and Grace is Larry. But the other two, I don't know. And it is what the Farrellys have done is they've decided to just make a new Three Stooges movie without the real Three Stooges.
What?
They're just making a Three Stooges movie. Let's have a look at the trailer and we'll come back and discuss this.
What? So
here is the Three Stooges.
It was a blessed day when through these hallowed gates a stranger rode and delivered unto them a miracle. This spring.
What is that gadget?
This is an iPhone.
iPhone?
Uh-huh.
Hello? Hello? There's nobody there.
Get some mo.
Spread out.
Mind your P's and Q's.
Don't forget to dot the I's.
Certainly.
Larry.
He's got a headache.
No, I don't.
How about now?
Yeah, it's coming on.
And Curly.
This little light of mine.
Hey, guys. Yeah.
Oh, hiya, Sister Bernice.
There's something different about you. Did you get a haircut?
From 20th Century Fox.
You got any dynamite?
Come here.
Stooges.
Hiya, Snook. I got your present.
Really?
Yeah, go on, open it.
Ow!
And why the hell is Snooky in it?
Why not? Hey, if you recognized the nun at the start, Sister Mary Mengele.
There's a guy.
Guess who was playing that?
Who was that?
Larry David.
Was that Larry David?
That was Larry David.
Fuck off.
Oh, what's he doing really? In this thing?
Yeah, no, really. I remember him being cast in it as Sister Mary Mengele.
Do you know the scariest part?
I recognized the guy at the start, and I had to go back and double check it, but that's Larry David.
The scariest part of this whole thing is I've seen that trailer 3 times now in getting ready for this show, and I never actually noticed it was a guy until this time.
I would agree with you, David,
it's
though.
It's not the kind of... I was just saying, it's not the kind of thing that I would expect you to be paying much attention to, Dave.
No, no.
There's only one bit where I was paying attention in that trailer.
Yeah, that was, Sister Mary, what's her name, getting out of the pool. Yeah. look, that looks awful. Awful.
Yeah, look, I actually made a joke several times on Twitter this week. I refuse to acknowledge that trailer. I'm not posting on the site. I'm not publicizing that film in any way. And I don't even want to watch it until tonight. I hadn't. So thank you, David.
I'm here to terrorize people. What can I tell you?
I hate you.
All right, that's it for news, guys.
I'm right there with you, Joe.
So if you are thinking that Hollywood is ever creatively bankrupt, all you have to do is tell yourself that they have made a new Three Stooges movie. And it answers the question, really, that yes, Hollywood's pretty bankrupt at the moment. In the creativity.
Yep. Ideas-wise.
Ideas-wise, in creativity. All right.
Oh, a wise guy, eh?
Oh, don't. No more. No more. All right, list of 5 this week. 5 spin-off movies. And I said, made a movie and decided that you didn't want to make a whole sequel? Why not just spin off a character or two into their own movies? What could possibly go wrong with that idea? All right, let's have a look at this list and say, Josh, you can start us off this week.
God, why I always got to start? All right, well, as I said at the start of the show, my list is based entirely on the concept that these films are always atrocious, or at least 90% atrocious. So I decided to create a list of, I think, the worst offenders in the world. And the list starts with Elektra.
She's a little higher on my list, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Got
a higher?
Yeah, because remember,
I've got some good ones.
Now, because remember, I go from really bad to good. And to let you know, she's a little bit higher.
That doesn't make sense, David.
Yeah, because there's worse.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, then I'll pass along to the next person.
No, tell me, Elektra, you hated this movie?
Oh, come on, man. Who didn't?
Yeah, well, okay.
It's fair. Just like, it's like everything you saw in the trailer, you were like, that's enough to make me want to have a look at this film. And people are like, it's based on the character that was in Daredevil. I mean, and I was like, what, you mean that atrocious film where she was shit and her whole character was terrible? They're going to make a movie out of that?
Yeah, you know why, don't you? Because Daredevil made like $450 million. I want to do something.
Yeah, fine. Cool. Didn't make it good.
No, it didn't. The only thing I gave Elektra is the fact that I thought Typhoid Mary was a bit of a babe.
Agreed.
I thought she was kind of hot.
Still not based on
terrible. It was terrible. Yeah. But there is worse. And I will tell you what that is. All right, Richard, you're number 5.
My number 5, I literally just put in 5 seconds ago because I decided to take it. I was going to put Puss in Boots on this list.
Right.
But because I think it is a perfect example, even though it's our feature film this week, I've decided to take that out. And this film doesn't replace that film, but I reshuffled the list. So I put Supergirl as number 1. That's number 5. Sorry.
I thought about Supergirl. I really did.
And look, you know, I mean, it's not a terrific film. That's why it's at number 5. But, you know, it was a pretty good. I mean, she was a babe at the time.
Helen Slater, yep.
Helen Slater was pretty awesome. And it was, it was an okay film. And I really enjoyed it. And they didn't make any sequels to it, which they really could have. But I thought it did everything that it probably should have done.
I actually thought Supergirl was a terrible film, but in all the right ways.
No, I agree with you. Yeah. I can watch it now and appreciate it for the 80s camp that it is.
It actually makes me giggle when I watch it.
I might actually have to do it for an upcoming 80s bit. So
you might have to. Okay, as I said at the head of the show, my list is going, the concept of my list is basically number 5 is being crap and number 1 is actually being watchable. Okay, so we're working our way up the list. So
right.
My number five, not to shortcut your Elektra, Josh, but is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Doesn't exist, dude.
Which is a spin-off film.
What movie was that, David?
All right, I'll talk in a vacuum for a moment, okay?
What was it? What film?
You know, the one with the claws, dude. The one with the claws.
Which film?
What David, was it I called? Think you're cutting out there. I can't hear you.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to turn your mics down for a minute. X-Men Origins Wolverine is a case is an example of where
white noise.
You again. Do not do a spin-off. In that style. All right, Josh, you're number four.
Aw. I'm sorry, dude. I didn't mean to cut you off. My number four is Evan Almighty, which I just thought was really average.
Actually, a little higher on my list because I actually didn't mind it. It's terrible, but I didn't mind it. So.
Wait, it's terrible, but you didn't mind it?
No, what I'm saying is it's not a very good film, but it actually had enough moments in it that I go, it's kind of fun. It's cute. It's nothing special.
It's the whole objective-subjective thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's you kind of sit there and go, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, cool. Well, moving right along.
This is what I love about movies. It's completely subjective.
Absolutely. And we both know that I'm not the comedy man.
Absolutely.
So.
And look, Evan Almighty got slam roasted when it came out. There's no doubt about that. And it's not a great film, but it has a couple of funny moments in it. So, and I've seen it a couple of times because Nicholas quite likes it. So, you know, I've seen it a couple of times. It's all right. I thought Bruce Almighty was a better film. So it's a perfect one for this list.
Absolutely.
So, Richard, number, what were we up to? I've lost track.
Four.
Thank you.
Is, for me, it's the Tigger movie.
Oh, yes.
Which, interesting enough, even though they seem to have had a million of them, it was the first feature-length Winnie the Pooh film.
And I liked it.
It was the one that came out in like early 1970s, like 1960s, early 1970s, but that was just three shorts strung together to make a feature. Mm. The Tigger movie was a spin-off of The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, but it's actually the first feature one, and it worked really well.
Yeah, it did.
And
I liked
it. It was a lot of fun. And I thought it was and then led to more spin-offs like the Piglet's Big Adventure.
I like the Piglet movie too.
Yeah, so there's all these ones that spin off, but that was the first spin off, so I thought I'd include that one.
Cool.
Fair enough.
Josh, number three.
Okay. Have you done four?
Yeah,
you haven't done four, David.
Didn't I do four? Oh, no, it's my turn, isn't it? It's getting late, man. All right, my number four, going up the scale, I think it's actually slightly better than my number five, which is Elektra. It's not a good movie, but it's better than Wolverine.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you that one.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, so that's why we're going up the scale on my list. So Wolverine's crap, Elektra's a little bit better, not much, but a little bit better, and we'll keep going up from there. Your number...
It's adjacent to crap.
It's adjacent to... It's near crap. Yeah. Your number three, Josh.
Right in the middle of my list, and of course I own it, even though it's really, really shit, is Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah,
which everybody knew was going to be on my list. But this film, look, I don't think this film is really that great, but it is so cheesy and so camp and so crap that I love it because I'm a horror nut, and I don't need to justify that.
No,
we're going to move on.
Just like we don't have to justify comedy, do you?
Exactly.
There you go.
You do have to justify putting Wolverine anywhere, though.
Oh, I said it was crap. Well, you should appreciate that.
Yeah, Anyway, moving along.
So it's actually sub-crap.
Did I mention it's getting late?
Yeah, it's very late, man. All right, Richard, you're number... Where was that? Fuck,
three.
Three, thank you.
Can we switch hosts?
Wait a minute.
Oh,
there you go.
My number three is Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure.
Oh, it's further up my list. God damn it. I thought I was being original by picking that one. I figured no one would have that.
Of course I'm going to have it, man. Spin-off of Return of the Jedi. I'll talk about it more when Josh gets to it.
All right, sounds good to me. All right, my number three. So we're banging in the middle of the list now. So that's Evan Almighty. I don't think it's a great film, but it's kind of watchable. It's nowhere in the league of Elektra, but, you know, it's all right. I think it's a mistake. The problem I feel with Evan Almighty is it was a mistake of the producers to take like this little tiny secondary character who really is only in about 15, 20 minutes of Bruce Almighty and say, let's make a film about him. You know, I think that's a bit of a problem.
I think it was just the fact that Steve Carell's star had risen by that stage.
And they couldn't get Jim Carrey back.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey said no. So they want it. But the biggest problem with Evan Almighty, I think, is that Tom Shadyac was literally given like $150 million to make the film. It's a film that shouldn't have cost more than $20 million. You know,
no, they didn't actually have to recreate Noah's Ark.
No, no. I mean, he spent so much money on that film. He's thinking, there's no way this film makes its money back. It's a silly idea. Anyway, Josh, you're number two.
My number two is Scorpion King, bud.
You know, it's almost, I was almost on my list.
Yeah.
It was almost, there was almost in the Evan Almighty spot. And I took it off at the last minute because do you know why? I knew it would be on yours.
Oh, yeah, no. Look, dude, The Scorpion King is one of those tragic films where it's like I watch it and it's like, and don't hit me for this, Dave, but it's like Conan the Barbarian for me, the originals, which is that I can't take them seriously because they're butch, masochistic, and make very little conjugal sense to me, but I still love watching them.
I'll give you that it's very much like Conan the Destroyer in the sense that it's really stupid.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what helps you.
That helps me get through the day. Richard, you're number two.
Is Get Him to the Greek.
That's higher on my list, actually.
Yeah, it's a spin-off, of course, from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So we'll talk about it when we get to it on your list.
Sure, not a problem. Joshua.
We're getting a lot of this happening in this list, aren't we?
We are.
David, did you do yours, though?
No, I didn't. I forgot again. My number two is actually the spin-off from The Fugitive, where we took the Tommy Lee Jones character and just made U.S. Marshals.
I love that film.
Nowhere near as good as The Fugitive, but a good film in itself. That's why it's number two. It's high up on my list. I quite liked it, but it's not even in the same league as The Fugitive.
Ah, dude, I'm sorry, but Robert Downey Jr., Tommy Lee Jones, and an early Wesley Snipes before the tax problems. Come on, that's a winning combination.
I thought our DJ was in there.
Before, yeah, man. I actually, before the tax problems. I love that.
Hey, you rest in peace.
Josh, you're number one.
My number one is Caravan of Courage.
There it is. Take it away, boys.
It is just awful. It's just so many shades of awful. It's amazingly
awful. Not the opposite.
Go on, man. Talk.
I mean, look, it is bad because I'm going to be controversial here. Return of the Jedi is not a great film.
That's not controversial.
No,
but
that's actually pretty much standard feeling at the moment.
No, but compared to the prequel trilogy, it's a masterpiece. But when you're spinning off the weakest entry of,
I would like to make one observation though.
Yeah.
Which is, we got it in the cinemas here in Australia because we're at the ass end of the world. But let's not forget that Caravan of Courage was actually a television special.
No, and I've got to say, this is why it's harmless. As a television special, it is phenomenally
absolutely
good.
And I agree with you. Yes.
And it's like the effects and the set design and everything about it is amazing
it's
for a television.
It's a far cry from the Star Wars Christmas special.
This is long before HBO and any of the high budget television things that we're seeing now. This is a movie that would just happen to be screened on television.
Absolutely. And Josh, you hated it.
Who hated it?
I think Josh, you hated it.
I just thought it was really silly. Again, I saw it far too late. It isn't an early memory for me.
Right.
I actually stumbled across this when I was about 15, 16. You know, during my angry, brooding stage of life. And I was sitting there watching it going, the fuck is this? And just proceeded to rage the entire time it was on. I was just like, "What? Why did you even do this? Why does this exist?" And
clearly didn't see Battlefriend or...
I have,
just the other one.
Which is actually the better of
now
the
that
two.
That one makes me angry.
I see, I actually like Battlefriend or more.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah. No, I did. I liked it.
Wait, can we get a soundboard? Soundboard check, please.
Soundboard?
Oh. Thank you, Dave.
No, I actually remember seeing, because I actually was not, I was a little... I was actually... What?
It makes me laugh every time.
I was actually a little underwhelmed by Caravan of Courage. And I remember thinking that Battle for Endor actually fixed a few of the problems, like, you know, ditching the kids, right?
Yeah, well, it's that. Is it Caravan of Courage has the one that looks, the kid looks exactly like Luke Skywalker?
Yeah, yeah, that's one. Yeah. He's even wearing the orange jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Whereas Battle of Endor was kind of like more, it was dealing with just the only thing that Battle for Endor had that I didn't like, it didn't have a witch or something in it, which I thought was kind of stupid. There was a witch or a wizard or something like that.
Yeah.
That was kind of, and it had that speedy little thing.
Yeah, and this is around the time there was the droids cartoon and there was an Ewoks cartoon.
Yeah.
That was spinning off left, right, and center. Luke took control of the thing back again.
All right, I've got to come out and say it. I don't think either of them are actually particularly good, but that's beside the point. Now I'm thinking back on them.
Let's just say, compare it to the Christmas special.
I was going to say, they've come a long way from the Christmas special. All right, yeah. That's fair.
Are you kidding? That's entertainment for the whole family right
there. Yeah, except it goes for 4 days. Have you watched
up Carrie Fisher for the win.
It is so long. I watched it actually. Yeah,
the singing takes 3 days.
Oh man, I was going, does this ever end? Anyway, happy, or what's a happy life day or Earth, whatever?
Life day.
Life
that's
day.
Right.
All right. My number one is Get Him to the Greek. Are we up to one?
Hang on, you've skipped my number one.
I'll see, I'm all confused now because you were saying, you know, Richard, tell me what your number one is.
My number one was, and I'm surprised neither of you had this, is Machete.
Oh, forgot about it. Yeah. Is it really a spin-off?
Spinning off from Grindhouse.
Yeah, but it's not a spin-off.
No, because he wasn't actually a character in
the
movie. I
actually lifted off my list for that exact reason.
Really? Because in the full version of Grindhouse,
it's a trailer.
It's a trailer, and they expanded that into a full film. It fits the perfect mold of a spin-off.
No, because a spin-off would say that he was in one of the films, not in the trailer. That's like saying...
The trailer was part of the Grindhouse experience. There was no plan to do a Machete movie until...
I'll give him that, actually. That's fair.
All right, that's fine. All right, I'll let you go with it.
You look up spin-offs online, and you do a Google search, and it appears in all of them.
Been doing a bit of Google searching.
Oh, I mean, that's how I do all my lists.
He cheats. All right.
Now you tell us about Get Him to the Greek.
All right, my number one is Get Him to the Greek, because out of this list of films that I've got here, that for me is probably the best example of the spin-off that I've got going here, which is the fact that we've taken one character, because even though what's his
Machete.
Name? No. What's his name? What's his name? We got Russell Brand and
Hill.
Jonah Hill. Why is it I can never remember Jonah Hill's name?
It's too close to Jonah Hex.
Is that what it is? Anyway, Jonah Hill, even though he was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he's actually playing a different character. So we really only got the Russell Brand character in Get Him to the Greek. So we've taken one character who was a secondary character and spun him into his own feature film. So that's a perfect example of a spinoff, and I really enjoyed it. I actually thought I thought Get Him to the Greek was a very, very funny film indeed. So that's why it makes my number one.
Agreed. It was my number two, so yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Are we done?
I think we're done.
Can we go to bed now?
Yeah. It's actually 10. We're recording this and it's now tomorrow.
It is now tomorrow. Technically, we're now on Sunday. All right. If you agree or disagree
with me. Happy birthday, Mum. It's my mother's birthday today.
Oh. Happy birthday, Richard's mom.
Happy birthday, Richard's mom. If you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say today, send your email to...
Such as you don't think it is my mother's birthday. One of the things you disagree on.
Well, there you go. And if you're a Richard's mum, send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com.
She never listens to anything I do. I've got one of those mothers, and let's face it, we've all got them. It's kind of like, you know, look, I'm really impressed that you met Steve Carell and all, but when are you going to go back to being a lawyer? It's the reason I try and get as many interviews as I do.
One of those mums. Okay.
No, really. I just met the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the world. It's good, but it's no law degree.
Yeah.
We've all got those mothers.
When are you going to get a real job?
Real job. Yeah.
All right. Now.
Bruce's mum still says that to him.
Sorry?
I'm sure Tom Cruise's mum still says that to him.
I bet.
Yeah, she probably does.
And, but, you know, we probably put our foot in it because, you know, he probably doesn't know his mother or something. You know, we just... We're probably going to get hate.
I'm thinking one of the biggest stars in the world probably still has a parental figure that's like, you know, when are you going to get a real job?
Yeah. Just take a pick.
This acting gig's not working out, really.
All right, let's wrap this puppy up. I want to go to bed. All right, get your merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, do any of those things. Just go to geekactually.com. There's a huge follow us button. You can find all those things there. Richard, where can people find more about you on the internet?
The internet.
Okay, Josh, where can people find more about you?
I'm also on this interwebs thing. I subscribe to it and everything. You can find me at rawdlc.com, which is a gaming website. There's all sorts of stuff over there.
Are you doing this properly?
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
Yeah. Richard, we're recording.
Wait a minute, wait.
That's right.
Josh, Richard's gone bye-bye. What have you got?
RawdLC.com is a gaming website. Check it out. Make sure that you go over there and look at it, and it's got all sorts of great stuff. And hiphopnetonline.com.
Fantastic. Richard, I'm going to give you one more shot at this. Richard, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought. TheRealBits.com. It's a film website. That's RELLBits.com. You can find me constantly, except for right now, because I'm very, very tired, on Twitter at DVDBits.
Oh, thank God we got that out finally. Okay. Couple of friends out there. Charlie and Brad are back. Check them out at reboundradio.com. They got a couple great podcasts. You can also find them all on iTunes. Go to weekendronin.com for the real junkies, R-E-E-L. They got a podcast like us, but they like to drink tequila. You can find them on iTunes or at their website. Sorry, guys. You're not going to get much better a plug tonight. Find out more about our cartoonists.
If you stop, you'll run out of energy.
Find out more about our cartoonists. Josh Spencer over at attackninjablogspot.com. The new cover art is going on the show this week, so you can see that. Richard's made the cover art.
Yay! So, I'm laughing.
So you'll be able to see that. We open the show. We open the show with a clip from Shrek 2. We are closing the show with a track called "The Wagon Chase" from the soundtrack to "Puss in Boots" by Henry Jackman. That's it. Bye, guys. I'll see you all next week. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. We'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.